This is Common Ground, a program on world affairs and the people who shape events.
The reason there are in the Holocaust Project the experiences of many people represented, that is homosexuals, women, gypsies, people who were forced to work in the slave labor aspect, is because what I learned from my whole commitment to feminism is that everybody's experience is important. That's what it really means. Everybody's experience is important. You know, we have inherited a history that says that only certain people's experiences are worth recording.
Artist Judy Chicago confronts the Holocaust on this edition of Common Ground. Common Ground is produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. Several of Judy Chicago's best-known works have explored issues of oppression and injustice, especially as they affect women. Her multimedia work called The Dinner Party portrays women's oft-forgotten contributions to Western civilization through a series of place settings. This past fall, Chicago unveiled her latest work to the public. It's titled The Holocaust Project. Like some of her past works, The Holocaust Project is a collaborative effort of several people, including Chicago's husband, Donald Woodman. Chicago says this project gave her an opportunity to explore yet another part of her identity, what it means to be a Jew, and how power, one of her common themes, can disfigure people.
The Holocaust is a direct outgrowth of the definition of power over others. If you take that definition to its logical outcome, you get the Holocaust in its most grotesque form of power over others, where some people decide that they have the right to dispose of other people whose lives are worthless or unimportant or interfere with their goals. The concept of utility, as it is enacted in many parts of our world, that is, where a creature is considered useful only in terms of what you can make out of it, a person is considered useful only in terms of what you can get from them. That concept of utility and the way in which it is woven into the fabric of our whole larger social structure can be seen as connected to, when taken to its most grotesque point, the Holocaust. So this is about a commitment to a different set of values. And the other thing I want to say here has to do with, I think, something that's very dangerous, which is the idea that a human experience, such as the women's experience or the Jewish experience, should only be interesting to women or to Jews. I think that this was quite dangerous, actually. We never intended this. I certainly never intended this in the 70s. You know, I never intended to suggest that only women should be interested in women's experience. I think that the problem with that is, I mean, now that I see the kind of fragmentation of community that's taken place as a result of this idea, you know, I think this is actually very, it's sort of the opposite of everything that I believed in, which was that by identifying the unique, one could find the universal. Mm-hmm. And it is in the universal that we will find a place to come together, that which we share. And one of the things that's so interesting to me, having worked on women's experience and looking at that, and not then transferring my gaze to the Jewish experience, is the way in which, because information, knowledge, experience, techniques, crafts come from a particular human experience that is devalued, the information is inaccessible to the larger human race. And the thing is as we face ever-growing threat to our planet and our species, we need to find a new way of being and looking and thinking And so all human experience can, in fact, become important in our process of trying to transform ourselves. The alternative, of course, is destruction.
What exactly led you to turn to the Holocaust? Because you've long been known as a feminist artist who addresses issues of gender and power.
Well, I came to a point in 1982 when I couldn't make images of women exclusively anymore. I had answered the question for myself, what it meant for me to be a woman and how that has shaped my life. I had answered questions about, for me, women's history and what it is that characterizes us as women, that is, our capacity to give birth. And then I raised my eyes. And it was right around that time that I began to actually think about the Holocaust by accident, as I talk about in the book. That is, that I met this poet who was working on the subject of the Holocaust, and I realized I knew nothing about it. And I think it was inevitable that I was also going to at some point take up what it meant to be a Jew, since I knew that being Jewish had shaped my identity, although I didn't know how.
Donald, how did you get involved in this project? Were you working on the previous project?
No, actually, Judy met at the same time that she was already thinking about working on the Holocaust project, or on the subject of the Holocaust. And we met, and she was going to New York to see the film Shoah, which I went to see with her. And at that point, it became obvious to me that this was a very important subject to deal with. And I think in my own personal photographic career, I was ready to take on the challenge of making art where I could express my values, express my own personal commitment to change, and to do art that had meaning and content rather than just contribute more to the decorative and traditional history of photography, art and photography.
I want to go back to the issue about feminism. And as I say, what does feminism have to do with the Holocaust, which got asked me by both feminists and people in the Jewish community, non-feminists in the Jewish community. I think that, for me, feminism is not about women. Although it has implications for women, it's not exclusively about women. And in fact, I keep saying that in the 70s, we actually cast the dialogue incorrectly. We cast it on issues of gender, which meant that men who shared our values became our enemies, and women who were our enemies became our friends. In other words, use feminism to move up the power ladder without actually challenging the definitions of power. And I think that there's been a tremendous misunderstanding about what at least my goals were and the goals of my colleagues at the beginning of the Feminist Art Movement, which was to broaden the whole definition of art, to redefine the relationship of art to society, the role of the artist in community, and to reexamine the definitions by which art is evaluated and intercede in those who control the making and distribution of art so that more voices could be heard. So what does this mean in terms of what does feminism have to do with the Holocaust? Well, it has to do with the fact that when I was studying, for example, genocide, looking at genocide, there were no women's voices. There was no women writing about these subjects. It was only men writing about these subjects. And that means that there is no feminist perspective being brought to bear on larger global issues. I think that this is a very large omission. I think we have something very unique to say as feminists because of our perspective, which is a perspective of coming from a disenfranchised position and seeing the world through the eyes of the disenfranchised, as opposed to seeing the eyes the world through the eyes of the powerful. I think this is a very unique perspective, and I think I've tried to bring that perspective to bear on the Holocaust, which is why I think actually our project is so different.
And also in the Holocaust project, in addition to exploring the idea that women's perspectives of the Holocaust may be different, you also talk about the different experiences that women had during the Holocaust. What were some of those? I know that you brought those out in several of your panels.
Well, first of all, let me, before I address the women's issue images in the project, the reason there are in the Holocaust Project the experiences of many people represented, that is homosexuals, women, gypsies, people who were forced to work in the slave labor aspect, is because what I learned from my whole commitment to feminism is that everybody's experience is important. That's what it really means. Everybody's experience is important. You know, we have inherited a history that says that only certain people's experiences are worth recording, and only certain people's experiences get to be imaged in the museums. So it's that if you start all over again, and you start from the idea that everybody's experience is important, and every creature on the earth has a right to live, if you begin from a different premise, which is what I believe a feminist premise and perspective is, that is honoring the earth, its inhabitants, and all peoples on it, and not assuming that some people have the right to exploit other peoples or that some species have the right to exploit other species. If you start with a different perspective, then you end up looking a different way. So it was because we have a different perspective that we look differently at, for example, women's experiences of the Holocaust, that we look to see how what happened to homosexuals after we saw a protest at Dachau. So, yes, we honored women's experiences because they're part of human experience, but we also looked at the multiplicity of experiences that we encountered as we did research.
Judy Chicago's Holocaust Project is a 3,000-square-foot traveling exhibition, and it combines painting, photography, tapestry, and stained glass pieces. It's structured as a journey into the darkness of the Holocaust and out into the light of hope. Chicago kept a diary throughout the 8-year creative process, and as you tour the several rooms that make up the exhibition, you can listen to a recording of Chicago and Donald Woodman as they describe each piece in the show. Here, Judy Chicago explains a detail from one piece called Wall of Indifference. It's of a train on its way to the death camps as it's passing through the woods in Frankfurt, Germany.
March 1988, Santa Fe. I struggled all day Tuesday with the image of the woman trying to save her child by throwing her from the train. It took me 10 hours. I pushed myself too far emotionally, and I went to pieces the next morning. Amazingly, after I'd finished The Mother and Child, which took several days, I read a story in the Jerusalem Post about a Polish Jewish woman who had, as a child, been thrown over the wall of the Warsaw Ghetto by her mother and saved by a Polish couple who had raised her as their own.
Chicago says she's always known she was Jewish, but that discussion of the Holocaust was an omission from her childhood. To understand the Holocaust better, she and her husband took several months to travel through Europe and the former Soviet Union to see for themselves the concentration camps, the extermination sites, and what's left of Eastern European Jewish culture.
During the first couple of years, we were traveling around the country looking at Holocaust exhibitions in America, and learning about the way the Holocaust was presented here. And, of course, what we learned was that the Holocaust was presented primarily as a Jewish experience, the Jewish experience of the Holocaust, the final solution. And that's what we thought we were going to do, too, was to commemorate the Jewish experience of the Holocaust. But when we went to Europe, we were just astonished because the Holocaust was presented so differently in each of the countries. That is, we went to France, and there it was presented as the resistance and partisan fighters, you know, like memorial to them. In Germany, well, in West Germany, of course, this was before the wall came down. In West Germany, there was, of course, silence and denial, or among younger people, right under the surface, guilt. But no memorials there, except for Dachau, which was really quite...
Sanitized.
Mm-hmm. In East Germany, it was all the anti-fascist struggle, and of course the idea was that all the Nazis had left and gone to the West. In Poland, it was the Polish martyrs. In Russia, it was the Russian people suffering. You know, I mean, in many of those places, the word Jew was never even mentioned. So that was like a really big shock. That was a really big shock. The other thing was we began to meet literally hundreds of people whose lives had been touched by the Holocaust in ways we had never even thought of. Their parents had been arrested for being anti-Nazi. These were like people who weren't Jewish. Their families, some of their family members had been incarcerated as political prisoners. Some of them had been in the war as soldiers. Some of them had been in the slave labor camps. And these were not Jews. So it was almost as if we began to realize that the scale and scope of the Holocaust was infinitely greater than we had any idea. Like the slave labor campaign, we didn't know anything about the slave labor campaign. And in fact, what happened was as Hitler marched east, they enslaved literally millions of people. They conceived of this plan where the, quote, lower races would be in perpetual slavery to the thousand-year Reich and would fuel the Reich. And the concept in the 20th century was, I mean, it was mind-boggling.
June 1991, Santa Fe. I've had an idea for an image about slave labor. I'm thinking about creating a gate structure based on the entrance to Auschwitz. I'm planning to call it Arbeit macht frei, work makes you free, the deceptive slogan displayed on the Auschwitz gate as well as in other camps.
We came back and I started reading like about the Armenian genocide, you know, and then I started doing research on genocide. And I started reading about the Armenian genocide. Then I read survivor testimony from gypsies, what had happened to gypsies. Then I read survivor testimony from some of the Cambodian massacres. And it was just amazing how I began to discover resonances between experiences. They weren't the same, and I think it's very important is that we...
Right, a lot of people, especially survivors of the Holocaust, have maintained that it's a unique experience.
The Holocaust was definitely unique. It was a unique historical event. There is no question about it. There has never been an attempt by a state to eradicate an entire people systematically. That is true. It is a historical first, and God knows, let's hope it's a historical last. Although, you know, you can see echoes of it in the concept of ethnic cleansing. The problem is when something is introduced into human behavior, it is very hard to unintroduce it. Once it becomes something that has been enacted, it's very difficult to unenact it. That's the terrible part. It becomes possible. What was unthinkable has become a possible part of our contemporary society. And the only way we're going to change that is by going through a massive ethical transformation. I mean, I kept thinking when I was doing the research for Four Questions, I almost called it technological giants and ethical dwarfs, because actually that's sort of where I think we are as human beings. We're technological giants, and ethically we are incapable at this point of being able to handle ethically our technological capacity. We do not seem to understand that just because we know how to do something, it doesn't mean we should.
You're listening to Common Ground, a program on world affairs sponsored by the Stanley Foundation. My guests are artists Judy Chicago and Donald Woodman. We're discussing their recently opened exhibit titled The Holocaust Project. The Stanley Foundation is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. You know what I found interesting in your writing, Judy, and I don't know if this applies to you also, Donald. You said, and I found this interesting, especially since you are a Jew, that you had never considered what would have happened had you been born in Europe earlier this century.
Well,
Donald's too young, but I'm not. Mm. I would have been murdered. Let's say my grandparents had not left Vilna. The Vilna Jews were murdered. When were they murdered? In 1943
or 41? something like that.
Somewhere. I can't remember. But anyway, I mean, if my grandparents had not left, my family would have been rounded up with the rest of the Jews who were taken into the forest and shot.
You know, both Judy and I come from our parents' generation were a generation who left, well, their parents were the generation that left the old country behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was like there were stories, I heard stories about my grandparents' life in the old country, but as Judy says, Latvia and Lithuania, it doesn't exist anymore. And in reality, it does. And I think to grow up with that illusion, you never think about, oh, well, one generation prior to me, I would have been living in this area rather than this mass migration to the United States. I feel like my family has lived in the United States forever because mm-hmm. of my perspective on it.
There was one other question that occurred to me in reading the introduction to your book, and you were saying that it wasn't until you were studying the Holocaust that some of your basic assumptions about the world and people were challenged. You'd always kind of believed it to be fair and just, and yet the themes of your past work also dealt with injustice. What was it about the Holocaust that...
I think that I can best answer that question by saying that somehow when I did the dinner party and I created this work of art in which I was expressing and symbolizing the way in which women had been contained and constrained by history, I imagined that I was going to break the cycle of history, not that I was describing where we were at. So somehow, by stepping back and looking at something, I do not exactly know how I thought I was going to escape its implications, but I did. Which is one of the reasons I think I did not internalize the reality I symbolized. I don't know if I'm making myself clear. It's sort of like, of course, I am not going to be obscured by history. That happened to other people, okay? I am not going to suffer anti-Semitism. That happens to other people. Somehow, by symbolizing it, by studying it, by creating it, I must have thought on some very naive level that I was going to escape the consequences of what I was studying. And I now understand that that is not true at all. And in fact, that what I have studied has now finally helped me understand human motivation at a level I did not understand it before. So now I can see sexism at work, anti-Semitism at work, self-interest at work, manipulation at work, denial at work, doubling at work. I can observe it in people. Before this, I was completely oblivious to it.
Have you been seeing a larger interest in your audience or an interest beyond just the people who belong to the museum here, the British Museum?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the beginning, the audience for the Holocaust Project has been much, much broader than a Jewish audience. My goodness gracious. First of all, people came from all over the country to see the show. People have been coming from all over the country. You know, Jews, non-Jews, art world people, non-art world people, feminists, craftspeople, Jews. I mean, there was a Benedictine nun at the opening at the Joy Horowitz Gallery the other night. I mean, absolutely we will have failed if the audience is only a small Jewish audience. We will have failed in our goal of really bringing a wide and diverse audience to think about why the Holocaust should be of concern to them.
You know, it's also bringing people in to see art who normally don't go to art museums because they feel alienated by what's being presented there. They feel that they don't understand the coded language that artists have learned to create to keep what goes on, you know, very in a very small group, which I find disgusting. I find it insulting, as a matter of fact. And the other thing that is very important to me is the fact that, you know, traditionally art is the conveyor of cultural ideas, of cultural values, of where a culture is. And I think what is happening with the traditional art world is that it is failing in that role, or what it's conveying has to do with monetary value and placing value on art as object and commodity and not as art as a conveyor of moral and ethical and social values.
this last weekend when we opened the show, we had private viewings all weekend, and people were weeping in the exhibition. They were weeping. And now, you know, I have a lot of experience with the power of art and in terms of how people have reacted to my shows before. But this was beyond Donald's and my wildest dreams, and it made me remember the idea a long time ago in Greek society of artist catharsis and what a function art can have, what it had in the Middle Ages, and what an impoverished role art plays now in our society. And people no longer even understand why art is important, which is why nobody cares when the right wing goes after art. But, you know, I don't believe this is true at all. I believe that art can be absolutely the single most important way human beings can see aspects of the human experience that are otherwise too terrifying, too overpowering, too overwhelming to confront. And if Donald and I, by doing the project, have made a contribution to understanding the Holocaust, I also hope we've made a contribution to seeing that art can have a far, far wider role than it now has, and that the elitist art world is a thing of the past.
What are the most important lessons you get from studying the Holocaust, some of the links that I made? You know, we've seen this revival of Nazi slogans among skinheads and white supremacists in the U.S. Is that...
My problem with that question is if I could come up with an answer on the radio, I wouldn't have spent 8 years making a body of art. You know, I feel like the lessons we learned from our immersion in the Holocaust are best understood from seeing the exhibition. I really encourage people to come and see the exhibition, read the book. The lessons that we, or
see the video.
See the video. I think that the best way to understand what we learned is to see the work we made.
Initially, Donald and I had set out to understand and commemorate the Jewish experience of the Holocaust. But during our trip to Europe in 1987, we began to realize that one of the most important aspects of the Jewish experience of the Holocaust is that it provides a graphic demonstration of the vulnerability of all human beings and, by extension, of all species on our fragile planet. We have tried to express this through our art. Our hope is that by confronting and trying to understand the Holocaust with us, as painful as that might be, you will find, as we did, that it leads to a greatly expanded understanding of the world in which we live and to the need for all of us to become, in the words of Anne Royce, carriers of empathy and watch people for the vulnerable.
Artist Judy Chicago narrating her latest exhibit, The Holocaust Project, which opened this past fall at the Spertus Museum of Judaica in Chicago. The show will be touring around the country until 1997. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. If you'd like to order a tape of this Common Ground program with Judy Chicago and Donald Woodman, call area code 319-264-1500. That's 319-264-1500. Or write to us in care of the Stanley Foundation, 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa. The zip code is 52761. We'd also like to hear your comments about the program when you write. Again, that's the Stanley Foundation, 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground is produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.